By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to Behind the Bonds, Connecting the Dots on Corporate Credit. I'm Tanya Hall, your host for this, our lucky episode number 13, coming to you from London. In this episode, we're going to talk about two big drivers of credit quality for companies right now, interest rates and supply chains. In the second part of this podcast, my colleague Suzanne Miller will be finding out why we are still talking about US supply chain problems so long after the COVID pandemic's peak, and how a combination of factors is making supply chain planning even more difficult right now for companies. But to start with, we're talking about interest rates. Around the world, central banks have been raising interest rates in a bid to cool inflation. But higher interest rates can have a big effect on companies. And here to talk about how that's affecting US companies in particular is my colleague, Yvette Cantro. Yvette, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Tanya. Here in the U.S., the Federal Reserve has raised the benchmark federal funds rate by 3.75 percentage points since January, and it's likely to continue to raise rates until inflation appears well under control. Jessica Gladstone, an associate managing director in our New York office, has been looking at how rising rates are affecting corporations' ability to pay back their debt. Welcome to the podcast, Jessica.
Great to be here, Yvette.
So before we get started, can you explain to our listeners how rising rates affect companies' credit quality and why they matter so much to some of the companies that we follow?
Sure. So simply put, rising rates increase companies' interest expense, meaning how much they must pay to service their debt. Think of it like your home mortgage. If the interest rate on your mortgage goes up, your payment goes up. That could make it harder for you to afford those payments or leave you with less money to spend on other things, including basic necessities.
Okay, so that's how higher rates can affect me. But what about companies? What does it mean for them?
Broadly the same thing. Higher interest payments can deplete their free cash flow, or how much money they have left over after funding all of their necessary spending. For many companies, when rates go up, they'll have less money available to invest in their business in order to grow, or to remain competitive. In more extreme cases, their costs will exceed their earnings, leading to an unsustainable capital structure, and a high probability that they will default on their debt. Lower-rated companies, say those rated B3 or below, typically already have a lot of debt relative to their earnings or are dealing with other business challenges. So rising rates will hit them particularly hard.
Got it. So in your research, you looked at how these lower-rated companies would fare in a higher-rate environment. Tell us a little bit about that. What did you look at? And more importantly, what did you find?
Sure. We looked at over 200 B3 rated companies in the US and Canada, and we calculated what their interest will likely increase to under different interest rate scenarios. And we compared it to what these companies paid in 2021, when the Fed funds rate was basically close to zero. We found that if rates were to increase by 4 percentage points versus 2021, and were already up 3.75, more than half of these companies would struggle to cover their interest expense.
When you say struggle, what do you mean? What does that look like?
Once a company has paid for all of its costs, including its capital spending, what's left over needs to be enough to pay the interest on their debt. If that ratio of available earnings over interest is less than one, that's a major indicator to us that a company may struggle to cover its interest. Now, we did our analysis based on what companies earned in 2021. So if a company's earnings are growing, then that ratio will be improving. But unfortunately, for a lot of companies, it looks like things are going the other way.
How so? What do you mean by going the other way?
Well, in the past few months, the macroeconomic outlook has darkened quite a bit, and we've changed the outlooks on a number of our industry sectors to negative. This means we actually expect earnings to decline for many companies in those sectors. We now expect profits to decline in at least 8 different industries, like retail and apparel and metals and mining, just to name a few. That's going to be a double whammy of increasing interest expense and weakening earnings.
Can you give us an example of one of these sectors?
Sure. So let's take U.S. retail, which is facing a bevy of challenges, ranging from supply chain disruptions to rising input costs to sagging demand because the consumer is feeling the pinch from cost inflation. Our industry analysts found that a handful of retailers are already not covering their interest costs. i.e. their interest coverage is below one, because of recent earnings pressures. And that's before accounting for any future rise in interest rates. So this means that the industry is likely facing additional defaults.
What kind of companies are these?
Well, not surprisingly, many of them are roll-ups, meaning they were formed by merging or rolling up lots of smaller companies into one. In some cases, their entire business model is based on accessing cheap debt to fund a steady stream of acquisitions. And that's a pretty risky proposition right now.
Clearly. Okay, so let's go to the other end of the spectrum. What sectors are doing better?
Well, one example would be software. Even a downturn, demand for software, particularly software as a service, will remain strong, particularly as companies continue to become more digital. So when we run our interest rate scenarios on this sector, we assume 10% earnings growth for companies, which is more than we expect in many other industries. As a result, we found that when rates go up by 4 percentage points, about 40% of B3-rated software companies see their interest coverage dip below 1. While still substantial, that compares to more than half of the broader B3 corporate sample.
Aside from interest expense, when you look at rising rates, what else are you analyzing?
Well, free cash flow is really important. As I mentioned, it's a measure of how much money companies have left over after paying for all their expenses, including servicing their debt and making capital investments. Free cash flow is already minimal for most B3 companies. So not surprisingly, way more than half of the companies that we looked at saw their free cash flow simply evaporate when rates go up by 4 percentage points. But software companies fare better. Two-thirds of them maintain positive free cash flow under this scenario.
Well, is there anything that companies can do to protect themselves as rates go up?
Sure, there are interest rate hedges, but most of the companies that we looked at didn't have any hedges in place. And for those that did, the hedges often offered limited protections. Hedges rarely cover the whole period of debt or all of the affected debt. So most B3 companies are still exposed to rising rates in some way. One thing to note, a lot of credit agreements have interest rate floors, especially loans held by collateralized loan obligations or CLOs. What this means is that even when the benchmark rate was close to zero, companies were still paying around 1% as a base rate on their loans. So if rates go up to 4%, the companies that had a 1% floor would only be paying a net increase of 3%.
Okay, so 3%. That doesn't sound so bad.
Still, 3% is a pretty substantial increase for companies to absorb. And keep in mind that this is for companies with existing loans in place. For companies that have debt maturing and need to refinance, their interest expense is actually probably going to go up way more than 3 to 4 percentage points, because not only are the base rates rising, but investors are demanding a higher spread on those loans. So we've seen companies having to pay more than 10% on new bond offerings recently. So going back to our mortgage example, if you need to find a new mortgage today or refinance your existing mortgage, you are going to have to pay a lot more.
Yes, and nobody likes that. Okay, so before we wrap up and we hand it over to our next guest, tell us what's the main message that you want listeners to take away when they think about rising rates and how they are affecting low-rated companies.
A lot of companies will see their cash flow and their interest coverage erode, which is likely to lead to a lot more rating downgrades and defaults. This is especially true now, given that the macroeconomic picture is turning darker, and companies are facing a whole host of growing challenges, from rising commodity prices to ongoing supply chain disruptions. That said, many factors will influence how an individual company performs, and most won't feel the full impact of higher rates until 2023 or even 2024.
So in other words, watch this space. Thanks, Jessica. That was really insightful. Next, to hear a little bit more about some of the other challenges that Jessica was talking about, I'm going to turn it over to Suzanne Miller and Maria Rosa Verde. They're going to dig a little deeper into supply chain disruption and its effect on different sectors. Suzanne and Maria Rosa, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Yvette. So in addition to interest rate pressures, U.S. companies are still dealing with supply chain problems. Maria Rosa Verde, a senior vice president in our New York office, has been looking at how companies are responding to uncertain demand and supply conditions, managing inventory, dealing with labor shortages, and extreme weather events have all become critical issues. Welcome to the podcast, Maria Rosa.
So glad to be here, Suzanne.
So Maria Rosa, can you help us understand why we're still talking about supply chain pressures 2 years after the pandemic peak? Hasn't the situation actually been improving?
Well, yes, it's fair to say supply chain bottlenecks have improved. Consumers are able to find most goods on store shelves. But at the same time, it's still far from business as usual for companies working to manufacture and deliver those goods. You know, the pandemic is still a highly disruptive force. It's causing shutdowns and delays across the world, and it continues to affect many companies because global commerce is so interconnected.
And it's fair to say that disruptions have been made worse by the Russia-Ukraine conflict, correct?
That's right. The war has not only endangered global food supplies, but it's created massive turmoil in global energy markets. As you can imagine, none of this is good for supply chain stability. And of course, the risk of escalating geopolitical conflict is a constant worry. All of this uncertainty is making strategic planning so much tougher than in the past.
You've also talked about the growing threat of inventory gluts, which is hard to believe considering how common product shortages were during the height of the pandemic. So how did this become an issue?
Yes, it's interesting. It's become an issue precisely because supply chain dislocations have made it more difficult for companies to plan. Going into this year, for example, companies were still focused on getting ahead of production and distribution delays. And one way to do this was to boost inventories. Companies wanted to be sure that they had enough product to meet demand, especially since consumer spending was really strong. But now consumers are pulling back on purchases, and that means companies across diverse industries are carrying too much inventory. And so the race to build that inventory buffer is now a problem. Suzanne, there is a cost to carrying inventory. And not only that, many companies will likely also need to discount the excess in order to offload it, and that will eat into margins. So this is happening just as rising interest rates are making it much more expensive to service debt, an important point that Jessica addressed earlier.
Okay, so let's talk about labor shortages. How are they contributing to supply chain problems?
Yes, this is an important area. You know, the pandemic depleted the labor market, which was already facing headwinds due to the pressures of an aging workforce. And labor shortages are still an issue. And they are especially acute in trade and blue-collar occupations. Some of these positions are critical for the smooth functioning of supply chains, like truck drivers, for example. So the longer these labor shortages last, the more time it will take for supply chains to fully return to normal. This also means companies must pay up to recruit and keep workers, and that's adding to a litany of growing costs.
Okay, so Maria Rosa, you've also written about how climate change is contributing to supply chain pressures, but how exactly?
This is another important area. Take the increased frequency of extreme weather events like floods, storms, and drought. Unfortunately, these weather events are becoming more intense and are forcing companies to come up with supply chain contingency plans. So you may have seen recent reports, for example, about record low water levels on the Mississippi River. This is making it very difficult for barges to transport grain and other products. And some companies may need to find alternate and likely more costly ways to move these goods. This is just the most recent example of how climate is really contributing to supply chain concerns.
Okay, so earlier in this podcast discussion, Jessica talked about the dangers of rising interest rates on U.S. corporate cash flow. So as we wrap for today, can you explain how this relates to supply chain pressures?
Yes, Suzanne, rising interest rates are taking a toll, as we know. And just as companies also need more capital to tackle supply chain challenges, we could in fact see more companies default because of these competing demands on cash. Alternatively, we may also see more mergers and acquisitions because in the end, companies with more resources are simply better able to withstand supply pressures. I think the bottom line is that these challenges will likely be with us for some time.
Thanks, Maria Rosa. This was very helpful. And clearly, there's still a fair amount of unresolved supply chain issues, which we'll be watching carefully. Back to you, Tanya.
Thanks, Susanna Maria Rosa, and thanks again to Yvette and Jessica, too. It looks like a lot of companies face a cocktail of risk in the coming 12 to 18 months, and these could have a big impact on their credit quality. I'm sure this isn't the last we'll hear on these important topics. But for now, I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. And if you did, please do like and subscribe on your favorite platforms. You can find all of our previous episodes and other Moody's podcasts at moodys.com/podcasts if you want to explore what we're talking about elsewhere. And of course, there are links to the research we've been talking about today in our show notes. I hope you'll join us next month for what will be a special Moody's 2023 Outlook campaign episode. We're going to be looking ahead at what the coming year has in store for companies globally. Until then, it's bye for now from all of us here at Behind the Bonds. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to this Moody's Talks podcast. To find out more about the topics discussed, please follow the links in the show notes. You can check out other Moody's Talks podcasts by visiting moodys.com/podcasts.